This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald.
I'm Ramya Amadhin, and this is Kelly and Ramya.
Welcome back to Kelly and Ramya. Remember to check out our podcast. Subscribe using your favorite podcast platform. If you listen to the whole show, at the end, we have an audio vanity card. I'm handling that today. Or you can listen to the show in its complete segment forms. You don't have a favorite contributor or community reporter? Go back, check them out at your leisure, and listen to their segment specifically. Lots of great content on the program. Kelly McDonald with Ramya Amadhin.
Let's get into our monthly orientation and mobility chat. We do this on the fourth, Monday of the month with Mark Rankin.
Where am I? Where am I going? And how do I get there? I'm Mark Rankin. As a certified orientation and mobility specialist, I've been helping pedestrians with vision loss answer those questions for decades, with a few detours along the way. Join me on Kelly and Ramya for some travel tips and tall tales from the streets of Toronto.
Mark, you're an orientation and mobility specialist with the CNIB, and we have had you on for a while now, but you've been doing this for a very, very, very long time. So today we're kind of going to, you know.
Tell her, Mark, one less very. Come on, stop stretching his age up.
You know, in comparison to other O&M instructors is what I mean. the thing is, we want to talk about the scope of practice for orientation mobility, how it's changing, how technology is continuing to impact it, because technology is obviously always impacting O&M for blind and low vision people, but, you know, in general also. So can we start a little bit with the history? That's why I used all the varies. How was the discipline structured when you first started?
Yeah, you know, when you were lighting those gas lights.
When I invented the white cane,
That's right, exactly. That stick you picked up on the ground from the birch.
From
a birch tree.
I would say it's been an evolution, but I think probably, it's been about 25 years I've been practicing in the field, first with the CNIB and then later with Vision Loss Rehabilitation Canada, when we sort of spun out on our own. And I think, you know, a lot of the core stuff that we teach has remained fairly constant. But there's a certain point at which a person becomes more independent, and at that point, that's when I've really seen technology have a huge impact on the amount of information that an individual can get who might not be able to get it visually. That was something that wasn't available earlier on, right? So when you think of the core sort of things that we teach, which is the beginning stuff, is especially with someone who's younger, vision loss, you've got to make sure that they're learning their concepts and that they've got, they're able to integrate their sensor information. And those two things go hand in hand. And there's not much of a substitute for that. I mean, there's no substitute for firsthand experience of the world, right? If you want to make sense of the world, the best thing to do is to go out and put your hands on it and listen to it. And if you do have some vision, to look at it. And that's hasn't changed that much. There's certainly ways in which you can use technology to kind of help develop concepts. Something I sometimes use will be Soundscape, because you can create a beacon. So creating a beacon and allowing that to sort of work as a way to orient yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you create the beacon, you say that's north. And that's a good way to teach sort of the cardinal directions of someone, right? The north doesn't move even though I'm spinning around. North is where it was. So
that's right.
There's certainly ways it will supplement. But I think it's with travelers who are a little bit more advanced on their sort of rehabilitation journey where technology really makes a big difference. I guess the thing I always sort of wonder is there a place where technology can support the existing skills or where it can augment them? And is there a point where maybe it becomes a substitute for those skills? And that's the sort of thing that you have to kind of figure. Is it feasible for someone to be totally dependent on technology for this particular route or for this particular activity? And if that's the only way they can do it, then by all means, right? Like, I mean, you know, I don't have to tell you, travel without with very little vision is really difficult. So whatever allows you to accomplish your goals is absolutely a decision that you need to make. Your orientation mobility specialist can certainly help direct you to some resources and help develop some skills that you might innately have. But you know, you've got to decide what's going to be your way of accomplishing your goals.
Yeah. It's interesting, Mark, because I think about people who drive. You know, as you drive, you get worse habits. And it must be that way when you are asked, Mark, come out and show me. And I'm thinking back to when you showed me around the 10, where we are at 1090 Don Mills area, when I first got there and you came out and worked with a few of us on how to move around the area. But I always think, oh my gosh, is he going to get on me about the bad habits I've picked up? You know, the things that you get braver as you know your concepts, but you cheat on and do your little things because you know, and especially if you know an area, you've got those different concepts that you jump into. So when we look at things now and dealing with people, all the things you're talking about, because I know there are a lot of people who drive and they couldn't go anywhere without their GPS nowadays, where 25 years ago, as you mentioned, you had to maybe use maps, but you had to fend for yourself a lot more. Now you can literally put it on and just let it tell you where to go. And some of us need that too as we navigate.
Yeah, I mean, I've noticed that when I get, so I will get placement students occasionally who are doing the work placement before going out to become certified orientation mobility specialists. And the last few years I've been amazed because I'll say to them, okay, we're going to go here. And it's like a few blocks north of where we were last time and like maybe one block east. And they'll be like, oh, no, just give me the address. And they put it in their GPS. And that's how they get around. I think, how are you teaching travel skills when you're depending on a GPS to navigate four blocks from where we were last week? That's the reality is technologies, especially for younger people, is so integrated with every aspect of their life that as an orientation mobility specialist, I have to try to figure out, you know, from a technological standpoint, what are the tools going to be that these young people are going to use, because they'll use them, you know, with or without me. It's my responsibility to make sure that I can try to advise them on how to use the best, or which ones might, you know, work better than others for certain goals that they might have in mind for travel. But it's, if I had my way, I'd still be, you know, on my flip phone. Yeah. I could charge it once a week.
And you'd be forcing people to learn things, the North, East, South, and West, because, I've gone into places, what's the address here? I'm trying to figure out where I am. Oh, and this is the employees I'm asking. And that, geez, I don't know. What's our address? And that's just not what people see, where I know I don't go by address unless I, you know, was taking a taxi or something like that, or needed to kind of say, hey, this is where I'm at. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I go by, you know, cues and things like that and landmarks. But that's kind of a thing of the past, even for those of us in the low vision blind community. For some of the younger people do it differently, as you say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we're self-driving technology is really emerging now, right? So, you know, Tesla wants to do the robo taxi. I think in August they say they're going to debut it. Whether or not it happens, I'm not sure. But there's a few. I think Google's got a self-driving technology that they're using in a few cities in the States. So, I mean, it's a decision we all have to make: is how much of our daily living are we going to do on our own, and how much of it is going to be augmented or even replaced by technology? But it's an even bigger bigger choice for people with disabilities, because I think there's always been this sense of, you know, I've worked with people and they've said, we were working on a route and I came back and I said, how did it go last week? It went all right, but I cheated. And I'm thinking, well, what does that mean? They said, well, I asked somebody because I was not totally sure whether I was on the corner that I thought I was. Now, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, there's no such thing as cheating. If you're traveling, you use whatever tools are available to you. And if that means at certain occasions you ask the general public for some information, that's fine. But there's always been this sense, I think, for people with disabilities that they don't want to give anything up. They want to be as independent as possible. And a lot of people have different ideas of what that means. For some people, that means that they don't want to rely on technology. They want to do everything themselves. But I feel the environments change as well, right? So at one point, you could go out, intersections all kind of were very similar. often there was a step down curb, so you could hang your feet off it to kind of get oriented in terms of projecting a straight line of travel across the street, right? There were very few blended curves then. Very few advanced greens. Most intersections followed a predictable pattern, right? So north, south, and then east, west. Very few had to be activated by a button or sense traffic to change whether there would be a walk signal. So you could analyze the intersection by just listening to it. You could sort of figure out what was going on. I could take someone, we could listen to a few cycles, and they could say, okay, I think there might be an advanced green, but otherwise it's just a regular intersection. Maybe it's a little longer surge going north, south than east, west, because I also hear more traffic there. So I know one street's busier, but they would pretty much have a good handle on how that intersection worked. But now you get intersections where sensors tell, you know, will pick up cars waiting to turn left, and then they'll extend a left turn signal, or they'll give a left turn signal, and then the next cycle won't have one because nobody's turning left. So how do you figure that out? There's so many more variables, right? And there are a lot of intersections that without a accessible pedestrian signal, it's really, really hard to know when to cross. So technology now becomes essential to accomplish this task that at one point wasn't. And if the technology is not in place in the infrastructure of the city, then you've got to figure out what else you could do.
Well, it's inconsistent, to say the least, your experience crossing or experience at subway stations, at bus stops, or construction zones. It's inconsistent, to say the absolute least. And you're right, like the technology, when it's working or when you know how to use it, implement it into your day-to-day, also in conjunction with all the other, you know, hard skills, I guess is what I refer to them as, like landmarking and all these other things, you can have a very ideal experience, Mark. But right now, we're definitely not at that stage. Even as examples of apps that you get really, really reliant on, that are dependent on, are no longer available, or have switched up because of an update that, you know, tosses a whole wrench into the situation for people.
And as a confident traveler, it's hard to you to change. You do. Where are you going to stop and get the time if I don't need Mark to come show me this and that, because I'm very confident. Oh, yeah, I've got to go to that restaurant I've never been to before. I know that subway. I could jump on that. I can get off onto that. But we don't know. I when you talk about cars and the sensor saying, hey, you know, there's a car waiting here to turn, I better switch, I wouldn't know that affecting that light that I think is just going to be, you know, go ahead, green, red, yellow, go.
The environment is changing and the technology is changing. And that's what's really different for me as a practitioner in the field, is that there's so much to learn. And this is, I hear this all the time from colleagues. It seems like there's a new app every month that's now the best thing that you've got to check out, And how do you have time as a specialist to learn this technology? And I mean, sometimes we're lucky in that, you know, the clients that we work with, a lot of them are really, really technologically savvy, and a lot of them will look up stuff and start using it and let us know what we should check out, which is great, because then it's community sourced, right? So you kind of like, they're the ones who are using the technology. I like to check in with them, you know, and say, like, I remember the first person, I was working with a guy who very recently lost his vision, and we were downtown, because I took him to somewhere that was a little bit less familiar because I wanted to kind of test him a little bit. And he did really great. He found the destination. And then I said, I knew he loved Tim Hortons. So I said, you want to go get a coffee? You know, like, just talk about how it went. And he said, yeah, there's a Tim Hortons three blocks away on University or something. And I said, did you remember that? He said, no, I have the Tim Hortons app. So
yeah.
Right.
And he wasn't like, he knew his Tim Hortons. That's all he really knew.
Right.
But he knew how to figure out how to work that app. He could always get a coffee.
Exactly. And that's true too. Like, technology leverages us to be able to, you know, find the independence just in terms of like our, you know, checking what's around us, or, you know, being able to read menus, like all these other things as well, right? Aside from mobility. And that adds to the confidence factor as well. It's not necessarily just a tool specifically for O&M. And Mark, we could do like a 10-part series on this, because it's just very insightful conversations, but we've totally run out of time today.
Yeah, well, we can always revisit it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, pleasure.
Mark Rankin, he's our orientation mobility specialist. He joins us on the fourth Monday of each month to chat O&M.
And, folks, I'm looking forward to the next conversation. Hey, man, I'm lying. I guess I've been looking forward to all the ones today. Great topics. But up next on Know Your Rights, Danielle McLaughlin and her guest, Senator Kim Pate, reflect on the funding announced Tuesday for the Canada Disability Benefit. We get into that right after this.
It's fun, insightful, and inclusive. Kelly and Ramya return in a minute.
Hi, I'm Red Sale, inviting you to download the latest episode of My Life in Books, where internationally acclaimed authors discuss their lives, their work, and three books that have resonated with them. That's My Life in Books, available wherever you get your AMI podcasts.